Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is the Soundcheck Podcast.
And all the lights that lead us there are blinding. There are many things that I would like to say to you, but I don't know how. Because maybe
this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Noel Gallagher set the tone for British rock in the 90s and the aughts as the elder half of the battling brothers behind the band Oasis. He's back with a new solo album, his second. Chasing Yesterday is the fastest-selling album of the year in the UK and was the number one selling vinyl LP there so far. All of which is to say, it's a triumphant return for one of rock's most prolific and powerful voices. Noel Gallagher joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Welcome and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Number one selling vinyl LP in the UK. Are you a vinyl guy?
I've got to say, I've got a vinyl collection somewhere, but not anymore. Once you start having kids, it takes up too much room. But I was never one for getting into the science of sound. I like vinyl for the look of it,
yeah.
You know, for the artwork and stuff like that. But really, I can listen to music on anything.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of feeling it more than listening to it. But
well, I mean, this new record, you've produced most of this yourself.
I did all of it, yeah, pretty much, apart from two tracks which are co-produced, yeah.
Right, right. So is it a kind of all digital? I mean, do you get into that whole, I want this analog, I would need to hear tubes and wires, that whole?
Well, what most studios are like now in England is they're all pretty much analog apart from the tape machine. The tape machine has been laid to rest with right. Pro Tools rig. Everything outside of that is in the studio that I use is all old gear that breaks down occasionally.
Mm.
But yeah, I have a fair idea of what I want and a very clear idea of what I don't want, which is half the battle, really.
Yeah.
And I've made my last two records with the same two guys. It's just me and two other guys. One of them's a drummer, one of them's an engineer. So we've known each other for 20 years, so we get on quite well, and we know what we're going for. Yeah, it's easy.
Well, the reason I'm not so interested in getting lost in the weeds of technical details and stuff, it's just that so much of this record, to me, has kind of references to, like, classic old rock albums and artists and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of guitar solos on there, which you don't really tend to hear anymore, particularly from anybody coming out of Britain.
Yeah.
But
things like the Mellotron.
Yeah, well, you know? I'm a product of my record collection, you know. And when I learned to play the guitar, I learned by playing along to the Beatles and the Stones. And I don't particularly want to sound contemporary or like that god awful term that's been invented, modern rock. You know, I don't want to sound like that.
Wasn't that invented 30 years ago, modern rock?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the vintage guitars that you see from 1987 for, you know, in guitar shops. But I make records that sound like the records that I like, you know. And luckily for me, I've got to a stage where I'm on my own record label. I don't have to run it by anybody else.
Right.
You know. So if I want it to sound like, you know, something from the Sunset Strip in California in 1971, then it will sound like that. I don't have to sell it to anybody else.
So with a song like Girl with the X-Ray Eyes, I hear kind of early 70s Bowie.
Mm.
Is that, am I hearing things?
Yeah. I was writing that song at home, as I usually do, watching TV with the sound on, not really thinking about it.
With the sound off, you mean?
Yeah, with the sound down. And I just happened upon the chord progression, and when I was playing it for a while, and then there was a certain chord that I hit that tied it all together, and I thought, wow, that sounds very Bowie-esque. And that became the starting point for it. And I love that song. It's funny because it might be one of my favourite ever songs I've ever written, and I can't perform in live to save my life. It's awful, which is such a frustrating thing. But when I write a song like that, I'm maybe one of the only people in the world who will go, okay, it sounds like David Bowie. So most people will go, okay, well, let's make it not sound like David Bowie. I'm more of the thing, right, well, let's make it sound so much like David Bowie that he threatens legal action, and then we'll back it off a little bit.
You know. So you add in some Mellotron and, you know.
Yeah, and even the guitar solo. I didn't play the guitar solo. A friend of mine played it, and he was saying, what things you want? And we listened to Ashes to Ashes and said, that kind of thing, you know. And I mean, they're just things that I like.
Yeah. We're speaking with Noel Gallagher. This is the song from his new record called Chasing Yesterday. The song is Girl with the X-Ray Eyes. Called Girl with the X-Ray Eyes from Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, and the new album called Chasing Yesterday, which is out now. Noel Gallagher's here in New York. He'll be back for the Governor's Ball on Sunday, June 7th, here with us on Soundcheck today. And so the High Flying Birds, is this the same, like, small crew as
the
last time?
It's the same firm as last time, yeah.
Right. So talking about, you know, sort of allusions to classic songs and things like that, there's a line in Lock All the Doors where you sing, prettiest girl I ever seen. Prettiest girl I ever seen. And you sing it almost the exact same way that David Essex sang the same line in the song Rock
On.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that until I read it in a review. No, I didn't realize that at all.
Prettiest girl I ever seen. See her shake on movie screen. Jimmy Dean.
No. Honestly, I'm not a huge David Essex fan either. So,
just,
well, what can I say?
One of those things. Yeah.
He's not tried to sue me, so I can't relax on it yet.
Now, the last record had a couple of reworkings of older songs on it.
The last one had, yes.
Stop the Clocks.
There was two songs that were from the back end of Oasis that never got released, yeah.
Anything like that on this record?
No, the song you just mentioned, Lock All the Doors, the chorus for that song is about 23 years old. How it came to sit around for 23 years was that I had this song called Lock All the Doors, and I gave the verse away to a techno duo called the Chemical Brothers in England for a song we did together called Setting Sun. And I thought, oh, well, I'll just rewrite the verse and put the song. It took me 23 years to get there. And but other than that, it's all new, brand new.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the second track on the record called In the Heat of the Moment, to me, has a very... I mean, this has the ringing bells and the soaring strings. This is like a big, full-on... Yeah. If you had said, well, that's, you know, left over from Oasis, I wouldn't have been at all surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I did the reason that some of my songs sounds so much like Oasis is because I wrote all the songs.
Right, right.
So, you know, that's my style. And yeah, that's just what I do, you know. When I get a song like In the Heat of the Moment, for instance, which I could play you on acoustic guitar and it would still work, I do tend to just, you know, take it to the, as big as I can get it, you know, because I've got to play these songs in, I mean, huge arenas in England and, you know, and arenas around the world. So you can't really be doing plaintive little acoustic numbers, you know what I mean? So it can be quite a challenge to make it that big, you know.
When you're writing the songs, does it tend to be the chords first? I mean, you talk about having the TV off. And
absolutely. Yeah, I will sit and arrange an instrumental of a song. I don't have a studio at home. I don't have any means to record any of this stuff. So in the case of Girl with the X-ray Eyes, I had everything that you hear apart from the words. I had the melody and where the solo was going to go, and it all arranged. And then I just... That usually comes quite quickly. And then I will sit and play it until it happens. Mm. You know, and I'm constantly sitting on maybe 30 songs now that are completely finished in instrumentals, but I'm just waiting for the first line. Once the first line gets there and it appears, then it leads to the second line. And I've got a lot of songs lying around that are in various stages of completion. There's, you know, the songs that have no words and the songs that have a first verse and no chorus, the songs that have a chorus and no verses. Mm-hmm. And then there's the annoying ones that have a verse and a chorus but no second verse. But I kind of get around to finishing them, you know, eventually.
And then there are the ones that sit around for 23 years because you've given half of them away.
Yeah. And the great ones, the ones that people remember, are the ones that come quite quickly.
Well, and they come quickly, maybe, and then they hit us as a big thing. You know, it's like one big kind of sonic blast.
Yeah.
And then you start, as a listener, thinking, well, now, hang on. Wonderwall? Champagne Supernova? These songs don't make any sense.
Of course. I was playing Champagne Supernova recently in... I did it on my UK tour acoustically with a 50-piece choir. And became like a hymn, and I was, because you play it so many times, you kind of, the same chords go round and round, and in the instrumental bits, which I don't play on, I was kind of drifting off, and I was thinking, what does this even mean? What does this song even mean? And there's like this sea of people, and there's like young guys who are 15 who weren't even born when it came out, and they're kind of, you know, topless and swinging their shirts above their heads, and you're thinking, it doesn't really matter what it means. You know, that guy there who was not even a baby is singing it crying like it means so much to him, and it's like, who cares what it means, you know what I mean? But I do that a lot. Don't Look Back in Anger. I have no idea where that girl is, where she's going, what's happened to her, Sally, whoever she is, you know what I mean? It's just... I don't want to know either. It's magic. You know, those characters or whatever they are, they just appear in the middle of a TV programme. Yeah.
Well, and then, you know, as you were saying, for each of those people in that arena or in that concert hall, those songs all mean something different.
Well, I like to hear... Sometimes people tell me what it means, and I think, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, there was... I met a girl recently, and there's a song on my record called The Dying of the Light, and it's kind of about two partners in life, you know, going along the open road of life. And there was a girl in... she's only young. Again, we're a teenager. And I see her... she's crying at the gig, and I happened to meet her afterwards, and I was saying, what were you crying during that song for? And I was thinking, because she's so young, she can't really have lived a life yet to be contemplating what life could have been, which is what the song's about. And she said, it just reminded me of my parents. Yeah. And that kind of blew me away, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, wow, I'd never thought of it like that, you know what I mean? And it was a really nice kind of moment. So when you meet fans or, you know, people who like your music, and they tell you what it means to them, and it kind of gives a whole new perspective.
Yeah. But I can't get to the mountain. Behind me lie the years that I've spent. And I've been singing like a flower in the fountain. A title like, you know, The Dying of the Light, I mean, that'll make people think of Dylan Thomas.
Yeah.
So that seems to be an allusion that was intentional on your part.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm 47 now, and me and my wife are kind of, you know, well along the road of our relationship, and it's kind of, the song to me is saying, well, we've been through all this, and nothing really matters as long as we've got each other. Mm. But this kind of young girl was kind of taking it somewhere else, which was amazing.
Well, many years... Do you know Robert Fripp, the guitarist
from
King
Crimson?
I've heard
of him, yeah.
So some years... I don't remember what question I had asked him. It was a long time ago. All I remember is the way his answer began. He said, well, if you subscribe to the theory that the artist knows as much about his or her work as anybody else...
Totally, yeah.
I was like... holy cow.
Yeah, because when I was growing up, when I was reading... I didn't like my favourite artist telling me what their songs were about, because it would spoil it for me. And I'd be like, oh, don't tell me. You know, case in point, Martha, My Dear by the Beatles, you know, you find out he's got a sheepdog called Martha, and you're just like, no, whoa, don't go there with the dog. You know, I'm thinking of like, I'm thinking of like some naughty schoolgirl there, not with it's about a dog. Oh, well, you know, so I tend to, all the lines mean something to me, or I wouldn't write them. But I tend not to share it with people if it's, you know, in case it spoils it for them.
Right. Noel Gallagher's with me on Soundcheck. So what's The Mexican about?
Oh, it's about
after all that.
It's about a meal I had one night. It's not about. That song came from a previous album that I'd attempted to make with these kind of producers called The Amorphous Androgynous, and I literally made that song up in the studio. It took me maybe 20 minutes to write those lyrics, because this producer guy was badgering me, write some lyrics now. And
I thought you were the producer.
Well, I after my first solo record, I went in to make a record with these guys. It didn't work out in the end. They couldn't pull off what they were attempting to do. And but that song kind of in its embryonic state, I took it and finished it for this record. But it doesn't really mean a great deal.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's built
But I tell you what, when I play it in Mexico City in about 4 weeks, hallelujah.
Well, it's got this great kind of Led Zeppelin-y blues rock guitar riff that underpins the whole thing. Let's hear a little bit. The song is called The Mexican. It's from Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds and the new record called Chasing Yesterday. You say that you need love. Of The Mexican from my guest Noel Gallagher. The album is called Chasing Yesterday. It's Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. The album is out now. You talk about playing this song in Mexico City in a couple of weeks. You know Morrissey.
Yes.
And his kind of love affair with Mexico.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to see at the Barbican recently the Mexico Loves Morrissey event?
No. No.
Well, we did it here
In
New York, too, at the Brooklyn Academy of Music recently. All these Mexican musicians, like some great Mexican musicians, interpreting Smith songs, but mostly Morrissey songs.
Wow.
And there's that kind of love affair
with
Morrissey.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, yeah. It's a weird... I went to see him once in L.A. at some big gig, and it was full of Mexicans. It was, like, full of Latinos. It's a funny thing.
So... Speaking of the Smiths, you have as a guest on one track on the new record, Morrissey's former guitarist, Johnny Marr.
The great Johnny Marr, yeah.
Now, you're a guitarist yourself. What does Johnny Marr bring to the table that made you think, I need him for this song?
Well, I'm a guitarist who's more of a composer. I write on the guitar exclusively. So when I get to a point in a song where it needs something more, and there were specific points in the track that we're talking about, which is called The Ballad of the Mighty Eye, what Johnny plays in. It needed something on a guitar to elevate it, and it needed a guitarist to play it, like, who's got a distinctive style, like Nile Rodgers or The Edge or Johnny Marr, and as I don't know either of the other two, I called Johnny and I said, fancy playing on this track? And he said, yeah. And he came down, and I swear to God, I didn't tell him what to play, and he didn't want to hear the track beforehand, so he'd never heard it before when he walked in. And I could hear in my head what I wanted him to play, and I was kind of hoping he'd play it, and it was the first thing he played. And I've been sat in studios many times doing records when producers have said to me, you know what, this bit needs a kind of Johnny Marr thing. Can you do that? And I'm like, no, I can call Johnny Marr, you know, but I can't do it myself, because he's one of the greats, you know. He's got a distinctive style, as has Edge and Nile Rodgers and all those great guitarists. I'm not like that, you know what I mean? For me, my guitar playing is a tool to get the song finished, you know.
So, you know Morrissey, you know Johnny Marr. Which reunion is going to happen first? Smiths or Oasis?
Oh, the Smiths will go before we do. Because we're not going to reform. And I wouldn't have thought the Smiths would reform. I thought they'd have done it by now, wouldn't you? I mean, it would be great, and I would be at all of those gigs, and it would be amazing.
So your message to the Smiths is, do as I say, not as I do.
I'd love to go and see the Smiths. I went to see Johnny recently. He was doing Smith songs.
Yeah.
And when you go and see Morrissey and his band are doing Smith songs, as good as it is, it's not the same because it's not Johnny playing them, and he's got... And even with Johnny singing Smith songs, it's great, but it's not the same as Morrissey singing. And to put the two of them on the stage would be amazing, but there's no way you could push for it to happen because, you know, I know what's going on behind the curtain anyway. So. But, you know, as I'm on the inside of perpetual rumours about one band, but I look to like the Smiths as a fan, when you look at these things as fans, as I look at the Smiths, I think, well, it's... Why wouldn't they do it? Do you know what I mean? It's unbelievable. They're still young and they've still got hair and they still can play. And Morrissey's great and Johnny Marr's great. But knowing what it's like on the other side of it, that it's not as simple as a load of guys getting up on stage and just playing a load of songs for some fans. There's reasons why bands break up.
Mm-hmm.
And some bands, they split up, you know, for different reasons, and it's very easy for them to get back together. You know, Blur have just got back together.
Right.
So obviously what drove them apart wasn't that big a deal as it couldn't be fixed. Some riffs are enormously big to fix.
Yeah. You know?
So, and they don't interest me.
Well, you called the record chasing yesterday. There's a track on it called You Know We Can't Go Back.
Mm.
Is there a message there or?
There isn't the song. In the title, actually, I was bullied into the title by the girls at my record label were saying to me...
The record label that you run.
The record label that I run.
Allegedly.
I know. But the record label that I fund. I don't know what to say, actually, getting what happens. I'd finished the record, and I... One of the girls kept saying, do we have a title? No, I haven't thought of one yet. Do we have a title? No, I haven't thought of one yet. And then I'd been out one night in London, one crazy night out, getting until like 6 in the morning, and my phone's going, and it's Claire from my office, lovely girl. She's badgering me. Have you thought of a title for this record? We need one today. It's going up on iTunes for pre-order today. And I'm like, right, okay, well, what time do you need it by? We need it by 3 o'clock. I'm like, what time is it now? She's like, it's 1:10. I was like, what? So I scanned a few of the lyrics, and there's a passage in one of the songs called
While the Song Remains the Same.
While the Song Remains the Same, which contains the title Chasing Yesterday. The line in the song is basically saying, let's stop chasing yesterday and carry on moving forward. Of course, I, with a hangover, picked that out and thought that would be great. And then the minute it went up on iTunes, I kind of was looking at it thinking, oh, no, I know what people are going to say about that. And I called up and said, is there any chance I could? No, it's done. That's it. Okay, fair enough. So I've had to live with it ever since. But there's a message in the song. There's a time when I found I lost my way, love. I was standing inside of a silent city wall. With my head on my heart, I couldn't tell you if I'd been dreaming. And the message in the song is, you know, it's about two people who are about to leave a big metropolis. And it's kind of like, if we leave, you know, we can't go back. Are we doing this for real? And I guess maybe it's a metaphor for my thing, you know.
Yeah.
I stayed in the band for 20 years and it was a big decision to walk away from one of the biggest bands. And then But it's like there's no going back now.
Noel Gallagher's here with us on Soundcheck today. Great having you back on disc with the new record called Chasing Yesterday. And great having you with us on Soundcheck
today. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Speaking of fandom, I know you're living in London. Do you still get up to the Etihad to
see your team,
Manchester City?
Yeah, I do regularly, So, we've had quite a disappointing season, I guess.
It's been a little, well, after winning the league last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's coming to the, there's an end of an era coming there where some of the players are now the wrong side of 29 and, you know, there's not a lot of young kids there, so they're going to have to spend a bit of money this summer. Whether the manager will stay or not, I don't know.
Unlikely.
But, you know, if you win, you know, 4 trophies in 5 years, you can't complain about that.
Absolutely.
So there's just an end of an era. And what I will say is, though, the owners, it's the first real test now. And they've not put a foot wrong since they bought the club. And it's a real test of where we go from here. But I've got absolute faith in them.
Is he still to hate Man United now that Alex Ferguson is gone? Or?
Oh God, yeah. That's the club that keeps on giving. Yeah, there's always he was just such an easy target, but there's always the fans. The fans are just, you know what I mean. I can't get on side with those people. They exclusively wear bad shoes, and it's unacceptable.
Well, there's legions of them in London. There's a whole Man United.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
When City are playing United or United are playing City in the derby and I get on the train to go up from London, it's full of Man United fans, which can make for a tricky 2 hours.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schiffer.